Allemaal, welkom. The rest of this session will be in English. My name is Henry Bain. I work as a software architect at Snelstart. And today I will be presenting you a solution we built for application level logging. Fortunately, I don't have to do that alone. With me I have John Wang from the Microsoft SQL CAT team, customer advisory team. He will be doing the second half of this presentation, which goes into SQL Data Warehouse. So thank you so much for being with me. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay, let's get into it. Like I said, I work at Snelstart. Snelstart is a company that provides bookkeeping software. We are the single but one largest company in the Netherlands, after another one who shall not be named. I work as software architect, which means I work with the teams and I help them implement the features requested by the business or turning them down. So that's us. And today I will talk to you about a problem we've solved, I think, a year ago, and why we solved it and how we solved it. And the problem I'm going to talk to you about is logging, application level logging. 3 years ago, we started building cloud solutions, web applications, REST APIs, and which was a completely new thing for us as a company. Up till that point, we only shipped software to a customer. And one of the things we needed in our application was application level logging to know what was going on. And when I say detailed logging, detailed application logging, I mean things like entering method X, entering method I, executing query Z. Really that level of detail. That's what we're going to talk about today, how we solved that puzzle. And here is our end result. And this is why we use a data warehouse. We like queries. I'll get to that. Let's start with where we started in 2014 when we first implemented logging. The semantic logging application block, SLAP, was the preferred solution advised by the Microsoft Azure CAT team, not to confuse with SQL CAT, who advised us to use SLAP. And we did. And it worked quite well during development and during testing. But when we went to production, we had an issue with log entries disappearing, especially when the system came under pressure. We didn't know why. We still don't know why, but it happened. Insufficient throughput. Another thing is the table storage, where those log entries were stored, is, and I quote somebody at Microsoft, a great write-only store. And what he meant by that was it has tremendous capacity. It can contain much data. And if you want to get one entry out of it, and you know which one, you can easily retrieve it. But if you do want to do a query over table storage, that's difficult. We even ended up storing everything in four tables, suitable for different queries you want to do on the data. And finally, if I think about SLAP, I think about this. This is the code needed in our SLAP implementation to write relation is being created. Point. So that's a lot of lines of code, especially when you want to encourage your developers to log a lot, something that they are not used to, they don't want to do. We want this. Much easier. And this is what we're actually doing in production right now. So we were not satisfied with SLAP, and we started thinking about another solution. And of course, we used Google and started looking around, and we didn't find a solution we really liked. So stubborn as we are on our little island, Texel, we started building something of our own. And first of all, we thought, what do we need? Well, we need an easy-to-use API. That's a big thing for us. Like I showed you before, logger.log text. It has to be reliable. Logs that are emitted need to end up in the store no matter what the circumstances. And if ever, for any reason, you lose logs, we need to know we did and why we did so. It needs to be high throughput. We prefer to have low maintenance. We like to solve customer problems, not maintain our infrastructure. And we would love to have one data store where the logging information of all applications is collected and stored together. So when a customer request to one of our services comes in, we relay it to a second service, then to the database. We can trace that call in one logging solution without having to go to different storage. And finally, and that's the reason we ended up with our current solution, is we would like it to fit with the developer skill set we already had. Developers at Snelstart, we only have 60 now, and at that point in time, I think 10 or 12, a number of them from an external company. We had a really limited skill set as a company, C#, T-SQL, some stuff in Azure, but we couldn't stretch that skill set to every challenge we needed to solve. So we thought, can we do something to solve a problem with the skill set we have? So with these requirements in mind, we started thinking about how to solve our problem. And from us, using Azure, using Microsoft technology, using the Event Hub as a high throughput transmitter of receiver from log entries and transmitting them to storage was an obvious choice. It is supposed to be able to handle up to millions of events per second, much more than we need and we anticipate to need. It also has some buffer capabilities, so if you can't read at some point, it can hold your data for a while. And it also has the possibility to connect multiple readers of the same stream of data. Obvious choice for us. And then we started on how to store the data. And we thought, let's land it in a blob storage. And for two reasons. The first is blob storage is really, really fast. You can connect a lot of big data solutions, for example, to the blob data storage. And secondly, and that connects to the next one, you can easily load data from the blob storage into an Azure SQL data warehouse. And an Azure SQL data warehouse has enough ingress capacity for us to land all the logging data we receive in that warehouse, keep it there for more or less a month, do our troubleshooting, our analysis, our bug fixing, everything we need the data for, do it with the data in a warehouse. And that's where I connect with the existing skill set of developers, because they know T-SQL. They can query one gigantic table with log data. Welcome. So we tried and built something without Hadoop, MapReduce, machine learning, all other kinds of fancy things we didn't know about. So we went in and had a couple of tries. This was our first ID. And this is actually what Snelstart is using in production today. We have multiple applications that can write their messages, their log entries, to the Azure Event Hub. And we have multiple consumers, two actually. Both of them just do a simple write-through. One to the blob storage for long-term retention, and the other one to a SQL DW for that short period where we need to be able to troubleshoot and investigate issues. Works like a charm, except it's too slow. This architecture can do more or less up to 2,000 events per second. At that point, you have reached the maximum capacity of Stream Analytics. And not really on the ingress side, but on the egress side. Stream Analytics cannot write more than 2,000 entries per second to a warehouse, or a database for that matter. It can also not write more than roughly 1 megabyte per second to the blob storage. At least that's what we saw. So then you try something else. Let's try Azure Data Factory, renowned for its humongous throughput. And indeed, it can stuff gigantic amounts of data into a SQL DW. It can also stuff a lot of information into the blob storage. However, it cannot read from the Event Hub. So that was a no-go. This connection is actually one of the more prominent requests on user voice for the Azure Data Factory, although I doubt it will happen. You will see in a second why. So this is the architecture we came up with instead of the previous one. Let's just build a quick worker role that gets data from the Event Hub and emits it to blob storage. This is what we did our experiments with, And this is also the architecture that created the data set that John will go into later on for loading the warehouse. This is not what I would advise you to use, because this is outdated. Since 2 weeks ago, September 13th, there is an option in the Azure Event Hub to write all the data it receives into the blob storage. I do not know in which kind of directory structure, I do not know in which format, but it is possible. So most likely, if anybody wants to try something like this, I would advise them to use an architecture like this. So let's go one step back and look at the wall architecture, John and I, proof of concept, and which is the second version of the architecture we're going to recommend to SnellStart. We have multiple applications on the left, writing to the Event Hub, and connected to that Event Hub, we have two stream analytics queries. And they are really for quick, hot analysis. The first one generates some statistics about the number of warnings in a system, and is, for example, really interesting for operations after a deploy. If we see the number of warnings or errors spike up, there might be something wrong with this new version. So just a quick glance. The second one we use to catch all the fatal errors that are logged, enrich them with much more information from the warehouse, and just send them to the ticketing system of operations. The lower part is the more interesting, or at least what I'm going to talk about. And that is that custom component, which reads from the Event Hub, writes to the blob storage, and then we use a polybase load to get data from the blob storage into that SQL DW. And currently that's done manually by John, however, it can easily be automated using Azure Automation, for example. Another option might be the Azure Scheduler, although it doesn't connect to databases currently. And in this architecture, most of the things are just next finish. An Event Hub is there within seconds. Blob storage is easily created. SQL Data Warehouse is easily created. So you just put in a schema, and you have those other components to worry about. Writing from Event Hub to Blob Storage is probably obsolete, and it's quite trivial to build. It took me more or less one day. So there are two components here that might be interesting. And the first one is how we emit so many log entries from our application to the Event Hub. And the second one is the structure of that data warehouse and how we load it. Now, that final part John will go into. The first one I would like to share two thoughts about. The first one is, if you start using an Event Hub and you follow all the examples and the best practices, one thing you see returning over and over again is an HTTP connection string to the Event Hub, which is great if you want to go through a firewall or two or three. However, it's terrible for performance. If you want to write large amounts of data to an Event Hub, use AMQP, not HTTP. Also, you have that enormous amount of log entries in your application that you want to create batches of, that you want to store in some format and then forward to the Event Hub. Don't build your own batching logic. We did, we failed. Again, an architect at Microsoft looked at our code and he said, throw it all away. There's TPL data flow. I don't know, who of you has heard of TPL data flow? Three people, okay. Little chance I get corrected. TPL data flow is a NuGet package that you can get, and it's basically a log-free, asynchronously pipe and filter architecture building thing. To be more precise, it allows you to create a number of building blocks for a pipeline of data and have each of that blocks perform a specific task on the data under hand. For example, the action block, the one on the right, receives a set of log events and writes them to the Event Hub. Really simple. The middle block receives individual log entries, creates a batch, and puts it on to the action block. While that transfer is happening, the batch block cannot accept new messages. So we put a buffer block in front that can accept new messages while the batch block can't. And for example, if the batch block and the action block are blocked for a transient connection error. That's the architecture we used to emit events to the event hub. The better part, the code. Sounds really complex. It isn't. The only thing you have to do to start using AMQP is change your connection string. It has to start with endpoint is SB double colon slash slash, and on the end you might have to add a part as well. You can look this up. Do not forget it. Performance. More interesting, TPL data flow. I have to admit we had a couple of pages of our own code to do this, but this is all that is needed to create a TPL data flow containing those three blocks I described earlier. We see the creation of the buffer block with a maximum capacity, the batch block, which is greedy, which means it takes as much as it can get from the previous block, and also has a maximum capacity. It also has a batch count, that's the number of entries it puts onto the next block. Finally, we have the action block, which only gets an function pointer, I used to call it, a lambda function that gets a number of messages and emits it to that event hub. We link the blocks together, that's it. So that's all there is to emitting events. And when I built this architecture for the second time for a POC, because I don't want to share my production code in greater detail, it took only a couple of hours to rebuild this, this emitting of events to the event hub. So real quick, real easy, and really high throughput. I can put up to 100 megabit into this this configuration and it won't break. That's what I wanted to share with you about our architecture, about emitting events. I'm going to give the floor to John now. Before I do, I have to apologize, because I was going to ask how many of you are familiar with the Azure SQL DW. Hands, please. Well, there you have it.
Okay.
You have 25 minutes left.
All right, thank you.
Enjoy, John.
All right, thank you, sir. Okay, hi, everybody. Welcome. Appreciate you taking the time to join us for the sessions. My name, again, is John Huang. I'm from the SQL CAT team, which is a Microsoft arm of the customer advisory team. We mainly focus on helping the customer, whether it's preview of early product development and or adoptions, and helping the field with the POC, providing best practices, and helping customer with the deployment. So I can see that we actually have one person who's a familiar SQL Data Warehouse. I mean, it's a little out of scope for me to go through, you know, the basic of what SQL Data Warehouse is about, but I will expect to spend some time to sort of give you enough context to know what it is. So, because obviously it's a big solution, a part of the solution for Henry's workload. Okay. So first of all, SQL Data Warehouse is actually, this is a new service, PaaS service, an MPP, massively parallel processing PaaS service that we recently GA about July timeframe. We have, you know, 20 or so customer in production with this at this time. And it's basically, you know, it's a, you know, we took an appliance, which was formerly called PEW or APS, and we took that appliance model and MPP, and then we brought it to the cloud. So what you see here is that we have a control node and the compute nodes out there. So the control nodes is basically the head node, the one that orchestrates all the requests, the data movement needed. And then compute nodes is literally, you know, the workhorse of the architecture. So what happened is that when you have large amount of data is actually, and the data is actually, and the compute is actually being hashed to the compute node. So it's sort of like a divide and conquer type of you know, design that, you know, the more data you spread among the compute nodes, you know, more horsepower will get to, you know, do the work for you. As you can see from the bottom is the storage is actually being stored out there on premium storage. So what you see here is this, the scaling is independently separated between the compute and storage. So what that gives you is the capability to scale out on demand. So what happened is that if you need more compute power, you can actually, with the flip of the switch through TTSQL, through the portals, API, PowerShell, you can literally go from, DW100 to up to DW6000, which is equivalent of 60 nodes equivalents. So therefore, with that capability, you can literally scale out to get the performance that you need it. You can actually have the capability to actually pulse the data, pulse the compute, and don't pay any compute costs at all. You just basically pay for the storage out there on the blob, which is relatively cheap. And again, you can actually restart the services, typically like early in the morning or something like that. So you only pay, really, literally pay for what you need. And you don't have to suffer through the 24/7 paying for an idle services or resources. Right? So we'll talk a little bit about the schema of the workload, the logging workload here. So as you can see, the top is just basic, the data type and the column that we have out there. But what I highlighted there is specific to the SQL Data Warehouse syntax. So the first thing is cluster column store index. Bottom line is that this is data warehouse, and then we recommend for a large fact table for you to use column store. Take advantage of all the performance that comes with column store. Next is distribution equal round robin. What that syntax does is that it's actually hashed the data among all the nodes that we talk about, right? So in this case, we use round robin. Obviously, we have choices that you can actually hash on a specific column. So typically, you would select the columns that you have the primary keys, typically, or there's actually a best practices that you can take a look at. Again, it's out of scope for the session. But the bottom line is that this particular option is going to, it's the main factor for the performance of the data warehouse. So there's obviously, you have to worry about data skew, you have to worry about join compatibilities and data movement. So all those, take all those consideration, again, refer to the documentation out there and best practices that we have out there. Finally, the partitioning, we make it easy for you because all you have to specify is the boundary, slightly different from SQL Server. You don't have to worry about partition scheme, you don't have to worry about partition function. So next is the data layout on the blob that we have out there. Now notice that on the left that you can see data structure is this sort of like a hierarchy order. And there is a reason for that. So basically the high level is the year, and then as we go down to month, day, hour, and minutes. Now this is the data that comes out from the logging mechanism, right? It's and then we'll talk about how we can leverage this hierarchy a little bit later. So on the right is just basically the data files that comes out for this particular minute. So it's 2016, September 1st, day one, and the first hour. So as you know, that SQL Data Warehouse, we support BCP, we support SSIS, and Azure Stream Analytics. But the bottom line is Polybase is the only method that will get you the highest throughput. Period. It is the preferred and the fastest method that you want to get the data into the warehouse. Any other non-Polybase method is going to be single-threaded because it has to go through the control node. Therefore, that's a recommendation that we use for. We recommend you to use the Polybase. So, in order to use Polybase to load, these are some of the major steps that you have to define. First is you create the external data source. And then what this says is that hey, for data out there on the container, you have to specify, tell me where they're at. So in this case, we're saying that, hey, this is the container, and here's the URL for my blob. Credential is just basically the storage container, which is nothing more than the name and the storage key. The next step is define the external file format. And then this is what is the file format looks like? What are the date, special date considerations I have to worry about? So a highlight there is that this particular file that we use is a text delimited file, We support Orc, we support GZIP, and a few others. But for this particular workload, it's a delimited file. The terminator is actually semicolon. And the special date format or custom date format that we have is basically it's the five position digit milliseconds. So finally, the next step is the defining external table. And this is nothing more than just defining the metadata information about the external table. So as you can see, you know, just define the column name and then the data type. The main thing is the location. So again, this is back to the hierarchy I was talking about, right? So location, you're pointing to the 2016, 09, 01, 01, 01. So when I refer to this external table here, either I do select star on it, or I can load using this this table, external table here, I'm loading specific directory, subdirectory for that particular September 1st, hour one, minute one. So with that flexibility, I can actually load the data by minute, and by hour, by daily. So as you can see from the first insert statement right there, I'm loading data from minute one and then all the way down to minute five, right? And then the next is that for every hour, I just basically point to the external table files that, you know, 2016, 09, 01, hour one. And then finally, the last one is I'm loading by the day. So what that gives you is that the flexibility that you can load by. An example is that if I want near real-time ingestions and consumptions, I want to do it at the lowest granular level. So in this case, it's by the minute. But if I want to do some kind of reprocessing, reloading, or some historical load, for example, I want to pick the highest level that I could so I can take advantage of throughput, right? So, you know, the thing about the MPP is that there's a slight overhead of loading a bunch of small files. So if you, and then also there's to take some time for to sort of like ramp up. So if you get the data and then the data is large, that's where you see the highest throughput. And it's actually, we're going to demonstrate here with this performance metrics here. So as part of the POC, you know, Henry wants to see, give me some of the loading frequencies and SLO, we call SLO, so DW, different SLO right here. So I can use this as a data point. So I can go into production and sort of like, you know, decide what frequency do I want to load by. At the same time, keeping my cost minimal. I'm a small company. I can't afford to spend large amount of money for this service. So therefore, I want the best price performance that you can show me, right? So first thing we do is that we try to load the data by daily. As you can see, the daily this particular day is about 749 million rows, about 8,000 files or so, and it's about 80 gig, right? So we went through, we load that particular day. And on DW500, as you can see, it's going to take about an hour and 20 minutes or so. So what you see down there at the bottom is the rows per second. So we go from 154 rows per second, and then if we scale up to the higher end of DW6000 over there, it's about 442,000 rows, okay? And then next is that, what would I want to, how would it look like if I do it by the hour? So again, the particular hours, you have about 32.6 million rows, 361 files, and about 3.4 gig total. And with that particular granular level, we didn't need the higher DWU, right? So therefore, we just went ahead and do DW100, which is the lowest. It's about $1.10 or so per hour. So we tested out DW100. And again, you know, we're looking at like 90,000 rows per second, which is way, way more than what Henry was getting, 2,000 rows per second earlier. Again, we scaled up to W500, and we got it up to 187,000 rows per second, right? So at the lowest level is that what would it look like if I want to loot every 5 minutes? Because Henry said that, you know, this is what I want to take a look at. My goal is that I want to load every frequency for every 5 minutes and keep it under 5 minutes at the lowest price. So based on this, it looks like we met the goal. At the DW100, again, $1.20 per hour. with a, you know, we can load every 5 minutes for a total period of like 1 minute and 18 seconds. And as you can see that below of it is the rows per second. It's not as high as the one that, you know, the higher hourly or the daily. Reason being, again, you know, the files are so small, right? 25 files, 2.7 megs. So therefore, we never got a chance to ramp up. So we just got a chance to sort of like get warm up, load the data, and we're done. So that's the reason why you see as high as the throughput that you should see. Okay. And finally, this is sort of like a what we call a performance primitive. So these are the lists of all the major operation of the data warehouse, you know, workload would typically do. So you would see scanning, you would see loading data into, you know, heap table, no partition, loading with a CCI no partition and a CCI. Shuffle move is basically a DMS operation, a data movement operation that the query has to do to get the compatible join. And then CTAS copy is basically a way for us to copy data from one table to the other, just pure IOs. And then, you know, inserting from blob, which is nothing more than incremental load when you load. So why do we have this? Is that it gives you at least a ballpark. This is number is based on my testing. It's not part of groups, you know, releasing this. But the point of it is that I give it to my customer, and then I'm hoping that you would use this to size your data warehouse, right? A lot of customers come in and they said that, hey, I have an existing SQL Server, you know, DL580. I have Redshift doing a POC. What is the equivalent of DWU that I can use? I mean, it's easy enough for me to go out there and start out with, say, maybe 400 or 500, and then test out the benchmark. But if my benchmark numbers consist of a bunch of, you know, hundreds or so queries and so on, it, you know, it's time consuming. But at least with this, you can understand, hey, if I want to load to a certain amount of time period, if I want data to be scanned, you know, in a certain ranges, at least I can start out with this. So that's just basically a guideline. Obviously, every workload is going to be different depending on your row size, width, the compression, and so on. But at least it gives you a ballpark figure of what, you know, the performance looks like at this time, right? So finally, I'm going to turn it over to Henry to close out and comments.
Yes, thank you, John.
Thank you.
Sorry, couldn't figure out how the mic worked.
Okay.
Let's wrap it up. No worries.
No.
Thank you. Personally, I find we've bought an awesome logging infrastructure. It's completely different than everything else there is out there. It's custom built. It's fascinating, in my opinion. And it has high throughput, one of the things we were aiming for. It's also low maintenance. We've pushed it into production a year ago. And we've had to restart and stream analytics query 3 times, and that's it. No more. And we've built it in a couple of days, like I said, and it's built on SaaS and PaaS. It's just next finish. There's no patch management going on. There is no new versions going on. It's just off the shelf, and it just keeps running and running. And from where we stand, I would like to thank Jan for helping me to address a number of pitfalls we have hit, getting data from the Event Hub to the data warehouse. And also the team, the CAT team that helped us to switch from HTTP to AMQP and stop doing homemade batching. For us, this is a great solution. And it brings me to an interesting point that I want to share with you. Do you really need all those new fancy things they show you at tech days like these that you don't know about that might help you, or can you stick with the things you know? And we stuck with what we know. It worked for us. It still works for us. And I hope this can help you to do maybe the same or make other decisions. I thank you for your time. We will be sharing some details on what we did, the code, the SQL. We do not know exactly what form that will take, but you can always hit us up on Twitter if you want to know the state. So thank you for your time. Have a great day. One more thing, please. I have been asked to point you to the web application for feedback. However, if there is anything, please come to us. We welcome your feedback.